Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Hello, welcome to Motivation to Write. I'm so happy to have you with me today because I have as a guest Liana Pavane. She's a digital wellness coach, and she's going to talk to us about how we can put down our phones and pick up our lives. So let's learn a little bit more about Miss Liana Pavane. Liana Pavane is a digital wellness coach and founder of TTYL, a tech-free community dedicated to human connection. Liana founded TTYL in 2018 to help people have a healthier relationship with technology and social media. Since launching, she has been featured on Forbes, Thrillist, Time Out, Thrive Global, NY1, The Mind Journal, Darling Magazine, and more for her work in digital wellness. As a professional community builder, Liana believes in the power of unplugging and living in the present moment. Her tech-free events have been hosted at prominent spaces such as Athleta, Showfields, The Assemblage, Freehold, The Flower Shop, and Tijuana Picnic. When she's not hosting TTYL events, Liana is coaching clients on how to put down their phones and pick up their lives. I am so happy that Liana Pavane is here with me, and I love this. You help people put down their phones and pick up their lives.
Yes.
I like that. Because a lot of writers, because I'm a writer, I'm a blogger, I'm kind of like stepping back into blogging. A lot of my readers are also bloggers or writers, and yeah, we are addicted to our phones and our computer screens, and we spend a lot of time on technology, and we like to work in isolation. So there is a lot of, like, I feel dependency on our technology, and sometimes it comes at the expense of actually connecting, especially with other writers, let alone our family and friends. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, how did you get into this digital wellness coach space?
Yes, basically it's a tech-free community dedicated to human connection. So all about bringing people together, having those meaningful conversations. I usually host in-person pop-up events with board games and coloring and Play-Doh, mm-hmm. and then each event has a theme. So I bring in activations based on the theme of that event, and that could look like a mystical night with tarot and aura readers, or a live entertainment evening with singers and comedians or something like that. So it really runs the gamut. And then, in terms of how I got started, I was brought up in a really healthy tech family before that was really a thing. I don't think my parents really knew that was what they were doing, but it was really before the technological revolution really, you know, evolved. There was no social media or anything like that. And my parents were like, we don't want you watching TV during the week. No video games. So I really had to use my creativity and imagination. And then as I got older and, you know, technology was kind of forced upon me as it had to be if I was to do schoolwork and all that kind of stuff. So I had to get a laptop and I had to get a phone so my parents knew where I was. And social media started to really erupt when I was in college, and I definitely fell to the addictions of that and was frustrated with myself because I was never that person. That I was always the one to come, you know, play pretend and make up stories, and I was always the creative person. So we were on vacation after I graduated and I was having FOMO, and I just thought that, you know, I wish there was a space I could go to just be, you know, playing these games and like being my childlike self again. We don't get to do that anymore as we grow up. And I think it's such an important part of who we are. So TTYL was kind of born from that.
Yeah. And it looks like it's a space for mostly younger people.
It's so I target millennials. So really anyone between the ages, I guess now of my age, like 25 to 39, I think is something like that. I don't know exactly like what the cutoff is now because you know, everyone's getting older, but like 25 to 40-ish. I've definitely gotten a lot of older folks coming. People come alone just to make new friends. And it's definitely a great place for people to come if they've just moved to the city or, you know, they want to meet a new group of like-minded people. So it, I get a lot of really interesting characters for sure, but that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. And I don't know if we said this was located or this is located in New York. I don't know if we said that.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. So have you heard of a man by the name of Larry Rosen?
I feel like that sounds familiar.
He wrote a book called Techno Stress.
Okay.
And now I'm just going to totally age myself. And I'm definitely older than 25 because I'm like listening to you. I was like, yeah, I remember way back when we didn't have all this stuff. So in 2001, I was an undergraduate at CSU Dominguez Hills, go Toros. And I took a course. I don't know what requirement this course was fulfilling. I don't know if I found the course interesting or if it just happened at the right time. It was called Techno Stress. And it was taught by the author of the book, Larry Rosen. And the book was written in 1997. Okay, I'm taking this class in 2001. It's talking about the stress that the internet is putting on us, that fax machines are putting on us, that VCRs are putting on us. And I kind of laugh to myself when I think about it because my goodness, how things have changed since 2001. I mean, I remember this whole chapter on like cell phone and cell phone etiquette and when to call and when not to call people. And you could text. So I think there was a little bit about texting. Now there's way more stuff that we can do with our phones that has us addicted to our phones. So my question is, why do you think we have become almost like slaves to these little computers that we carry around all the time? What is that about?
That is such a wide, there's so many answers. It's such a wide question. There's so many rabbit holes I can go down there, but it very much comes down to the way that these devices and these apps were actually programmed and designed by these. I mean, we've all seen the social dilemma at this point. I feel like everyone's talking about it. It's very,
I haven't finished it, but I started it.
Okay. So it's crazy. I mean, I think the thing that stuck out to me the most is if you're not buying the product, you are the product. Mm. And to me, you know, if you're consuming something but not paying for it, that means that, you know, they're targeting you, right? Like you get these ads, they're listening, right? Like you're literally out to a friend and you're talking about, I don't know, you're like, oh, I was at Urban Outfitters the other day and I saw this thing. And then the next thing you know, you get targeted ads
from
Urban Outfitters on your Instagram, on your Facebook, on your Twitter, on like some random website, on the side ads. Like it's crazy. I mean, these apps are designed to target that dopamine that we have in our brain. So that dopamine that we usually get from maybe let's say a good long run and that exhilaration you feel afterwards, that riding that runner's high, you know, that people talk about all the time. It's like you break that sweat, you feel exhilarated, your heart's beating fast. You're like, oh my God, I feel like on top of the world. We get that from social interaction. We get that from human connection. And these designers were able to, you know, go into these companies and say, I know how to replicate this digitally. And so they created this this mechanism that basically replicates dopamine through an endless scroll, through the likes and comments and receiving them in a certain way. So, you know, I know like they've changed the algorithm so many times on Instagram so that we don't even receive the likes, you know, in the same way that they come through at the same times. It's so complicated now.
Yeah,
so we might get like a rush of them at once. And then it's like, oh my God, so much dopamine. We're so loved. We're so adored. But digitally, it's not even, we're not even receiving legitimate hugs or legitimate kisses or hearts or whatever they equate to in real life.
Does it feel to us that we are that? So it feels to us that we're actually connecting with other humans when we're actually just connecting to the technology.
Right. So our brain thinks so. Our brain is like, oh, we're liked, like we're getting so much love and adoration, but in reality, it only lasts for like 0.2 seconds. And a runner's high, an actual runner's high, could last us the whole entire day. And that is, you know, that's why we keep going back, because mm-hmm. we as humans, we want that rush. We want that positivity, that dopamine, we crave it. And if we crave this chemical reaction, that is exactly what Instagram and Facebook and Twitter are doing. They're like, oh, you're craving this? Oh, let me give you just little nibbles, you know, little mm-hmm. Hansel and Gretel nibbles throughout your day. Right. And then at the end of the day, you're still not satisfied because you didn't get that big burst at once. You got just a little bit throughout mm-hmm. the day. So very strategic, but very, very awful for everyone who's on them all day.
Yeah. And so what is that costing us physically, mentally, spiritually, that we are on our phones and computers all the time?
It's costing us our time. I think time is so important and so, so special. If you're not using any tool for a specific reason, it's just time that's gone and you're never going to get that back.
Mm. And how is technology affecting our perceptions of ourselves and other people? Because I know in one of your videos you mentioned that we can kind of edit our lives and we can present ourselves in such a way that we look almost as if we're living like the ideal life, when that in fact is not the reality, or we see other people with their pictures and we feel bad because we're not living as well as they are. Like, doesn't that start to mess with us?
It does, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, that's a lot of what we call imposter syndrome, right? This idea that we don't believe we're good enough because there's a million, billion other people out there doing the exact same thing that we are. And I think this really stemmed, and this idea really came about a lot with, I mean, it's been around for a really long time, but I think people have really capitalized on it recently with influencer culture and this idea that you can be an influencer and essentially getting, you know, it's not necessarily a pyramid scheme, but, you know, you get paid sponsorships and brands are paying you to market their product. And then you get followers and you post these beautiful lifestyle photos of you, you know, riding your bike on a beautiful villa in Italy or, you know, whatever it is. And you're out, you're traveling the world, you're in Bali, and people literally look to you and think, I don't have that. You know, they look around their face and they're like, what am I doing with my life? I suck. I'm awful. I hate myself. Or I don't have that body, you know? And it's just, it's kind of blown up this idea of the celebrity and like the perfection of what Hollywood is. It's now everywhere. It's not just in US Weekly and People Magazine that you have to go to a magazine stand or newsstand and actually purchase, but it's, you know, it's literally at our fingertips all the time that we see this constant, the American idea of perfection, quote unquote, right? It's this preconceived notion that we have to look a certain way, act a certain way. This is the perfect life. This is the filter that you need to put on your life to make it look like it's essentially perfect to everyone else. But in reality, that's not at all what anyone's life is like.
On the other end of that spectrum, though, I've noticed as a high school teacher that these students now watch, instead of primetime TV, like I used to watch, like TGIF on Friday nights with, you know, the Winslows. I can't think of the name of the show now with Steve Urkel and all that stuff. Now they're watching these shows on YouTube where it's just that they take the most mundane things and they're so fascinating, like opening up gifts or, I don't know, just weird painting your fingernails. I mean, just stuff that I would never as a kid think to be glued to a TV screen, or not even TV screen, a computer screen watching. It's just so strange to me.
There's a lot of, I don't really understand the TikTok culture or any of that at all. It's definitely after me and after my generation, but Yeah, it's fascinating to me when I do go on the app or, you know, just to, like, see what the hype is about and, like, watch my friend's stuff. And not that my friends post them, but, like, watch their TikTok. They have an app. And, like, yeah, none of my friends are really into that stuff. But, like, we'll watch and we're just, like, we got sucked in, too. Like, we'll watch these people do, like, flips in the air or, you know, do really fun dances or, like, make food or – and right. we're just – and then you realize, like, half an hour's gone by and you're, like, what have I even watched? Like, I could have been doing that myself. It's so – it's crazy.
So how can we begin to disconnect from all this and get our lives back on track?
I think it really all comes down to wanting to bring back our hobbies and bring back the time, the things that we really, that really bring us joy into our lives again, you know? So it's not just about posting the perfect picture and finding the perfect caption, but it's like, what can you be doing instead? Like, what did you love to do when you were a kid? And I think that's really what at the core, what my business model is all about is like finding the things that brought you joy as a child and doing them now. You know, I think as adults, we think that we can't do any of that stuff anymore. It's weird or, oh, I can't, you know, blow bubbles or like play a board game or do a puzzle or do arts and crafts. But in reality, that is going to help us thrive in our everyday lives. And it's going to make us A, happier and B, more productive. And it's, these have been proven scientific facts. I'm not just, you know, spewing this. I've read so many articles about this, that, you know, we take, especially now we've had the opportunity to work from home. We can take 20 minute breaks throughout our day and, you know, put some puzzles on a puzzle piece and, you know, add some snippets to a collage or, you know, make a piece of jewelry or something like that. And if you're stuck in a work project or you're frustrated with something, like going to your phone and going down that rabbit hole is going to make you feel those negative thoughts are going to get even worse. Cause then it's going to add on to the, you know, you're already in a bad place. Let's say you're going through a breakup or, you know, you're having a fight with your friend or something. And then you're like, let me just go to my phone. We use it as a distraction. And I think doing these creative, very easy on the mind activities like arts and crafts, for example, allows our brain to take space and really process the problem without actually going towards a device and distracting ourselves. And then when we go back to maybe, you know, our work or back to approaching the issue at hand and approach our friend, we have clarity. We've given our brain the clarity. But if we go to our phone and we open Instagram, we open TikTok, we're avoiding and we're shutting that subconscious part of our brain down to really process the issue. And we're making it worse by seeing, you know, getting into imposter syndrome and then going, then it's not only I'm having a fight with my friend or I'm breaking up with someone or, you know, work is really hard. It's I'm not good enough. I'm not perfect. I don't look like that. And it just, it's this downward spiral instead of taking a breath, walking away, doing something you love, and then going, oh, wow, I see this now. I have clarity. I know how I need to proceed in this issue at hand. And I think we really need to take more time to do that.
So let's talk about friendships and social media, because a lot of people meet their friends via Facebook or Instagram, or like you meet someone in a dating app. Is it possible to develop a genuine friendship completely via social media without ever meeting each other face to face?
I just, in my core, I believe that human connection to me means face to face. You know, I think right now we're doing a form of it, and I think we're having an uninterrupted, meaningful conversation through a screen, which is amazing and so cool that technology has evolved to that point. But it's not the same as if I would meet you in person and see your whole body and how you're sitting and how you react to what I'm saying. And, you know, just the whole, especially, you know, when you go on a date, when you talk to someone online, it's like, okay, cool. You can have witty banter and it's sexy and it's exciting. And then you meet them and they may be completely different. And then you get that added, like, ooh, are they leaning in? Are they really interested in me? Like, what's our chemistry in person? And I think the chemistry, you know, it doesn't go across screen. I think you can get along with someone and get an idea of who they are and a notion of who they are from a FaceTime even, but in reality, you're not going to get that full effect of the person and how you both vibe. I mean, I had this experience where I connected with someone over virtually for a really long time. We were talking for months, another member has his own digital wellness company, and we were talking for so long, and we really got to know each other. We'd have these hour-long conversations over Zoom, and we met in person. I was, like, super excited, and I thought, like, oh, I was, like, maybe attracted to this person. I don't know. And we met in person, and I was like, oh, no, like, this is totally just a friend. And I, like, didn't see anything there, and I was, like, I was glad because we didn't live in the same space, but I was also, like, there was just such a difference meeting this person in real life than I did virtually. And I saw... Mm-hmm. You know, you get so excited and you're like, you build up this idea of this person in your head, and then you meet them and you're like, it's not disappointment. It's just totally different than what you expected, and not in a bad way. It's just hard to, your brain does all these crazy things and makes up this idea in your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And you know something, Liana, I think that a lot of people, well, there are two points I want to make. First, that there seems to be safety and distance for people. So as long as, yeah, we're not in a physical space together, it just feels safer. I can, I don't know if you're more of yourself if you're at a distance, but there's definitely like a part of you that can, you don't have to be as forthcoming, right? So you don't really have to be real or show a lot of your true self. And also with the distance, there comes this sense of, I guess, I don't know what the race is. It's just safety. Like,
yeah, I was going to say safety. Yeah.
I was going to say something else and I can't remember what I was going to say. Oh, so when you mentioned that people, we can kind of devise this image of someone. I think we do that a lot too when we know someone like in real physical space. I think that we can kind of project things onto that person and have an idea of them. But then when they start to show up in a way that we haven't, that doesn't meet our idea of them, it upsets us.
Yes. Oh, you're speaking my language. And I talk about this. We talk about this a lot. I talk about this with my girlfriends, with my friends all the time, because especially with relationships, we always say, you know, you make excuses. You make excuses. If you start dating someone and you start seeing some red flags and something goes off and you're like, I didn't like what they said there, or that action isn't really what I'd like to see in this kind of person, the person that I want to really date. And your intuition kind of goes off. Right. And then you're like, no, let's just give them another chance. Or, you start making excuses. You're like, but they have this, this, and this going for them, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. And we do that all the time. It's just part of human existence. And I'm dealing with that right now. Like, yeah. I'm just getting to the point where I'm like, it's not worth wasting someone's time if I'm not vibing, you know, I just need to let them know.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's why it feels so safe if it's alone, if it's just all virtual, because we can keep that idea that we have of them. Because usually that they don't really start to show up and show out until we meet in person. I mean, as long as there's this distance, we can continue to have this idea and they can continue to meet whatever this idea is. But there's something about when you actually come together physically where things just start to really show up. And so I think that's part of the allurement of just knowing each other via technology.
Yeah, totally. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to start to maybe get some ideas on how, because I know you mentioned, what was the first thing you mentioned on how we can begin to disconnect? I forgot what you said.
Because I asked that question. Oh, incorporating our hobbies.
Oh yeah. So incorporate our hobbies. Is it possible, like, how do we get in touch more with our like spiritual self? If we want to disconnect.
It's a great question. For me, I love the power of journaling. I think writing and journaling, you know, when I say that, I think people get really, some people get turned off because they think, oh, it's going to be a dear diary situation.
This is what I did.
Putting pen to paper is so powerful and can have such a strong lasting effect on our mental health. And I really believe it's a form of therapy. It's a form of self-therapy, mm-hmm. a form of self-care, because whenever I'm in a conundrum of any kind, I go to my journal and I let out whatever's on my mind. And for me, free form writing, which means no judgment, no crossing out anything, writing straight through for as long as you feel, or you can set a time limit, has really helped me just get out really what's going on in my gut. I think all in my stomach. And I know a lot of people think with their heart or their mind, but for me, everything is connected with both, and that all goes to my gut. So whenever I'm nervous, whenever I'm unsure, I get this kind of, I get an upset stomach immediately.
Right.
And I just know that something's off. So for me, I love to just write it out, and maybe it looks like, you know, I know people write gratitude lists to remind themselves of all the things that they do have and the abundance that they do have in their lives. And I think that's a really great thing, even a great way to start, if you write 5 things a day that you're grateful for, because you're going to realize that technology is probably not on the list. Your phone's probably not on the list. Instagram's not on the list. And it just really goes back to the simplicity of life and just, you know, your family, your friends, a roof over your head. I mean, literally simple things. Whenever I think of what I'm grateful for, I never, you know, it would, yes, I have so many things that I cherish on my computer that I've created and built with my business, but if I lost it, I mean, I did lose a lot of documents recently. My computer got water spilled on it, and I had to, you know, I have a new one now, and I lost everything. I lost everything from, you know, high school to now.
Oh my gosh, that makes me want to start crying.
I lost scripts that I wrote when I was in college, and papers, and, you know, things that I really did cherish. But at the end of the day, it's like, I have me, and I have my friends, and I have new memories and new experiences to be created, new adventures to go on. And I have my memory, right? Like, that's all that matters. And it's tough to get to that point. But I think, you know, for me, it's also when you do take out technology and it's getting to that point, you can ask yourself a question before you open something and say, why am I going on this? Am I trying to distract myself from something? What am I trying to distract myself from? And that's when really the magic happens.
Yeah. So now you're starting to speak my language, Liana, because I am a fan. I am a true proponent of journaling. And I love, there are people that hate it and all kinds of different opinions on it. But I think that it is, as you say, it is really best, it's most effective if you free write. That's what I call it. That's how I teach. Just writing without judgment, as you say, without self-editing. Just, I call it mentally vomiting on the page, because it is very therapeutic. And that's really what journaling should be. I think people have this idea of journaling, well, I'm going to get my pillows together and a glass of wine and get this very decorative book and I'm going to write beautiful prose. And that's not really, I mean, if that's what you want to make it about, that, that's fine. But it really should be about just spilling out whatever is on your mind.
Yeah.
So how big of a role has journaling played in your development, like growing up? Do you think journaling has played some part in like who you are today, as far as now this person who is like, we need to put technology down and really start to connect? Because when you're journaling, it's almost like you're connecting with yourself in some way. And so maybe that's something you kind of had intuitively within you, where like you just like connecting with yourself, with other people. And
yeah, I definitely think so. I started journaling actually as a kid because my sister did. My sister's 12 years older than me, and obviously automatically cool. So I just thought, ooh, my sister's doing this. This looks cool. I should start doing it. And of course, you know, the many, many journals I have from that time are day-to-day basic journaling entries. But as I got older, I really saw the benefit of free writing and just really being judgment-free. I've definitely gone through periods of my life where I haven't journaled. And, you know, as everyone does, everyone ebbs and flows with, I think, a lot of things. But I've always come back to it. And I think I do, because I do when I feel either I feel like very detached from myself, or I feel very connected to myself. You know, when I'm trying to bridge that gap back and I'm going through a transitional phase in my life, I definitely have turned to it a lot during quarantine, more than I have in years. And I've written so much just because I felt like, you know, so much was happening and it was, I was on shaky ground within myself. But now I go to it because I feel so centered and I want to get even closer to who my true self is. And I feel even more connected and I want to delve deeper and see what's going to be uncovered when I free write. So I think it's just a beautiful practice, especially, and it's kind of a form of meditation in a way. I'm not really, I've delved in meditation and I definitely want to try it again. I'm always down to try it again. It's not my go-to form of, you know, getting into silence, but journaling has really kind of been that for me. It's just a way to get all the word vomit out of my brain and, and away.
And, you know, I think it would be great if most like people who just are addicted to posting toxic stuff on social media without even realizing how toxic it is. Like, for example, you know, Susie said something that ticked you off. So now you go on Facebook and write this diatribe on Susie. It might be best to journal that instead of posting it on your social media and then causing this a hot mess because you didn't use the right tool to really process your feelings. That kind of brings me to something else that you mentioned. When we go and we post things on social media, we're usually looking for likes. And so we've kind of grown into this culture of like me, like me, like me. And if you're not liking me, then that just makes me feel even worse than I already feel about myself, right? And then you kind of, you know, find some other rabbit hole to go down on the internet. But can you talk a little bit about this like culture that we're living in and how that affects ourself, our not even just our self-esteem, but our self-worth?
Yeah, I was going to say self-worth. It's tough because I think, you know, I hope most of us are brought up in, and that's not true for everyone, I know, but a lot of us are brought up in a home where at least one of our parents are telling us that, you know, you're great, you can do anything. And I think that is, you know, that's kind of another Americanized thing. You know, I think especially with like the boomer generation, I know my parents were kind of brought up in that mentality of like saying to your kids, oh, you can do anything, you're awesome. Like even to our grades, like, don't worry, you'll do better next time. And always, you know, giving us gold stars for everything we did, even if we didn't do that great. It's not like, oh, do better next time. It's like, okay, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it. And really coddling us. And the generation that is now raising their kids has instilled that and is now, it's getting worse and worse. And it's not, you know, there's no more, I mean, there's always going to be competition, but it's less so that and more so thinking that you're the best always. And that's, I think, where we struggle. And that's where, you know, if we see this, it's that nature versus nurture situation conversation. You know, it's like, if we were brought up thinking this one thing so deeply, and it's so part of our being that we are the best and we can do anything. And then we see even our best friend receiving thousands of likes, or, you know, becoming TikTok famous overnight or whatever it is. And we are like, but I'm great. What about me? I'm awesome. Look over here. Right. Mm-hmm. And we get, it's jealousy and that imposter syndrome and all of those awful things that start spiraling because we were nurtured and brought up in this way to think that we're awesome. And that's not to say yes, we should be taught that we can do anything, but I think there should be a level of reality in there when you're being brought up by anyone, because I know that I was brought up that way, and that was a really hard wake up call for me to just be like, there are probably a million plus people out there, hundreds of millions of people, billion people out there that are just as qualified as I am.
Right.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
Right. Yeah. I remember, and when I was in college, one of my professors would say, she was a music, I was a music major. She was one of the music professors. She'd say, there's nothing special about being special. So just get over yourself with your singing talent. There's nothing special about being special. This reminds me of Twitter. That's my social media of choice. And I see on Twitter all the time, people upset because no one's liking my post, or is anyone seeing my tweets? Why isn't anyone responding to me? And you can really feel the pain of these people that no one is seeing them. And I think, I just remember something that Oprah used to say, or she probably still says it, everyone just wants to be seen. Like, people want you to see them. And I think that goes into a lot of this, like, obsession for the like culture. Sometimes you just want a like to know that someone is seeing you. And that might be why a lot of people are maybe attached to their social media. I mean, if you're a teenager living at home and you feel like you're not getting the attention you need from your parents, then why not just go on your phone and see if you can get a bunch of likes? But what's dangerous about that, I'm sorry, I was going to say something. What's dangerous about that is you can start to change into somebody that you don't want to be just for the purpose of getting likes. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a iffy line.
I mean, it's that aspiration for celebrity. It's that aspiration for wanting to be the next it, wanting to be the next Kardashian, the next Miley Cyrus, whoever. It's, you know, and I think people don't realize that it comes with a price. Right. And once you get to that point, and even on social media, I mean, there's always people that are going to be awful and are going to make you, even if you get, you know, 100 comments that are loving and you're amazing, you're beautiful, blah, blah, blah. You get, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 comments that are nasty. That's what sticks with you.
Right, yes. Exactly. I actually had this conversation with a motivational speaker, and he was saying that he wrote a book. He had all these fabulous reviews. I'm spinning all over the place. I have to edit that out. He has all these fabulous reviews. And he got one bad review. And it just completely, that's all he could think about, was that one out of all the good reviews. It was that one bad one, you know?
Yeah.
That's crazy how that happens.
Yeah, I think that's another part of the like culture, is just, you know, as much as we want to be loved by as many people as possible, because we think that that's going to bring us joy, we still forget that there's always going to be the other side, and that everyone's going to have their own opinion, and we can't control that.
And I wonder how much does, you know, people always talk about self-love. You gotta love yourself. You gotta love yourself. And, you know, there are different opinions on what it means to love yourself and if that's even possible. But I wonder how much this plays into people wanting the celebrity lifestyle, people wanting the likes. I mean, if you really had a healthy relationship with yourself, then you wouldn't want all of this stuff just for the sake of being perceived or loved or liked by other people, right? I mean, if you're really good with yourself, you don't need the accolades and the confirmation, affirmation of other people.
Yeah. I think that all comes down to, you know, this vicious cycle of, oh, we need, you know, if you think of this wellness industry, right, that's booming about, you know, it's supposed to be about self-care and mindfulness and getting in touch with yourself and connecting, and it's full of, you know, meditation and, you know, Himalayan salt rooms where you can sit in, you know, all this crazy stuff that's, you know, acupuncture, whatever have you. Right. But in reality, it's like it's like the wellness industry is telling us that we need something in order to center ourselves. We need to purchase something in order to center ourselves, because on the other side, the two biggest industries, the wellness industry and the technology industry is distracting us from wellness. Mm-hmm. And it is the complete opposite of wellness, and it is detrimental to our wellness. And then when we've had enough with this, we go, oh, look, here's a spa in my area that has somehow come up on my, you know, marketing on my Instagram. Let me purchase a day of self-care. And then you go here, but we need to be here. Right. You know, we need to say goodbye left and right. We need to say, okay, let me take the time and actually stop the distraction, stop, you know, distracting myself or forcing myself to love myself by purchasing something and actually sit with myself. And that is the hardest part.
You know, it's interesting because the way you describe the wellness industry, I had never really thought of it that way, but it kind of reminds me of, you know, the prescription industry, the medication. Like, you're watching, there used to be TV shows that it seems like every commercial was some type of ad for a drug that's going to make you feel better. It's going to make you happier. It's going to make you whatever. And so, yeah, we might put down the technology, but then we're picking up pills, or we're picking up the spa. Or now, I don't want to equate spa and pills, but I'm just saying that they can be distractions. They can serve as distractions. And so this idea of just sitting, and I know a lot of people don't like meditation, as you mentioned before. It's for some people, it's not for others. But the concept of just sitting with yourself in silence, I think that's really hard for people, because when you get into that space of silence, all the thoughts are very loud, and you cannot really handle all of the craziness, because you want to tend to believe all the craziness instead of just realizing that these are just thoughts and they're going to pass. But it's just that being centered and being good with yourself scares people, because they have a tendency to get wrapped up in all of the craziness that's happening in their head. And that craziness is what keeps them attached to their phone, because the craziness is saying, you need to be on Instagram. You need to be checking what Sally's saying about you on Twitter, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like it just made me think that this kind of analogy of, you know, when I walk through Times Square, that feeling of overwhelm of, oh my God, there's so many lights and there's so many people and there's, that's how I feel every day in my brain, and probably how everyone feels in their brain. And then add on technology. Like, are you kidding me? It's like Times Square on steroids upstairs. Like, all the time. You're literally, think about it. You have 50 thoughts a second or something crazy. Right. Like, oh, like, you have to pee, or what are you having as a snack, or what are you having for dinner, and I'm going to cook this, and I need to set this timer for this thing, and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, oh, but then Instagram and Twitter. Like, that's insane. And it's just crazy to me that we can think and do so many things in one day. But whenever, I always feel like whenever I get out of the city, whenever I go somewhere remote or go be in nature for a little bit, I've been taking trips up to Vermont a lot recently, and my uncle lives up there, and he's like the poster child of just like do it yourself wellness, you know, like he lives his life up there. He has a business, he has technology, but he has done this. He's been doing the same things for, I don't know, like 30, 40, 50 years. He's been perfecting these recipes and doing all this stuff, you know, doing his own research on things. And he looks 20 years younger than he actually is and feels amazing, looks amazing. He didn't buy any product or do anything differently. He just lives his days and he goes for long walks and, you know, watches the sunset, goes to see sunrises. Like whenever I get back from those kinds of trips, I just, it reminds myself of, you know, how special time is and how special nature is in the world. And like, it just reignites this feeling of like, wow, I'm so happy to be here and so happy to live. And I feel like if we just could remind everyone of that every day.
Right. And, you know, even that's beautiful. I love that. Just taking a long walk, refining your recipes, just very simple things. But for even for people that might live in the city and don't have a forest or whatever, I mean, you can just take a walk down your block and just be aware of everything that's happening. I mean, could be a lot at once, like a car's honking and blah, blah, blah. But just the awareness, even the awareness of you taking the next step and the next step. How does the cement feel under your feet? How the blue sky, whatever. It's just the awareness is what matters, the being present in whatever environment or space that you're taking up.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe we're almost out of time here. I want to ask you about completely unplugging, because we hear this all the time. Just unplug your technology. Is this something you practice? Maybe you turn off your technology for a few hours a day or an hour a day or whatever.
Yeah, I have specific, I guess, routines or habits that I do every day. So, and then every once in a while where I really feel this, it's tough for me to like fully pull away as a business owner, and especially as a solopreneur. Like I don't have other people to manage my accounts while I'm offline, right? And I really don't go on much on the weekends or do anything really. But for me, when I really get to that point of like feeling overwhelmed, I will go on a full detox for a few days or sometimes a week. And I'll try to do this. I want to get better and like, you know, do it multiple times a year, but I definitely do it once a year, where I really go offline for multiple days or even a week at a time. And I usually coincide this with my vacation or something like that. But every day I really try to put my phone away at least an hour before I go to bed, you know, no screens, and really just do something analog. I love to read, wind down my day. And I always say a digitally well day really starts the night before. So being, you know, doing that the night before is setting you up for success in the next day. And we're not, you know, I'm not perfect and I try my best to do this, but things happen. And, you know, a friend will text me, I'll get in a conversation and then it's like past my bedtime. But then I notice that it's harder for me to fall asleep at the time that I want because I've had that blue light exposure for too long.
Right.
But what, you know, and then in the morning, same thing. I wait, I do my, you know, I usually get like to be active right away. So work out, like go for a run, something like that. And then I am ready to, you know, once I'm fully ready and showered and ate and did all that stuff, then I'll check my email and my Instagram and all that stuff. And really setting up pockets of my day to check all those things so that I can really have that focused, productive work for chunks of hours throughout the day. And then, yeah, of course there's Netflix. I'm not saying no Netflix, and I love my TV. I absolutely adore falling in love with characters and entertainment. You know, I studied that and it's always going to be a part of me and I don't want to throw that away, but you know, it's just being mindful of it and it's watching an episode or two and not letting the whole night get away from you. So all about balance.
Yeah, I thought of a few things. I'm going to have to wrap it up soon, but you said, I remember back in the day when we had landlines. I still have a landline, by the way, but I think most people have replaced their landline with their cell phone. Most people don't have landlines anymore. That adds a whole nother layer of stress because, yeah, I have my, even though I have a landline, I still keep my cell phone near my bedside. And unfortunately, it's like the first thing I do when I wake up.
And yeah, it can cause a lot of stress. If I'm looking through my email first thing I wake up, or my Twitter or whatever. And then the second thing I thought of, and this, I'm going to end it here, but I have to tell you, the first time I saw a cell phone was in 1988. I remember the exact day, and I was at a Kentucky Fried Chicken with my mom and my cousin, my brother, and this man walks in, and he has what looks like a mini suitcase, and attached to the suitcase is a phone receiver, and he's talking into the suitcase. And I remember staring at this man thinking, what is that thing? And who knew that that suitcase with the little phone attachment to it would lead to this conversation? Like, that has led to a whole range of stuff, good and bad. But it's just crazy how fast technology moves.
Wow.
Yeah. And it led to your career as a digital wellness coach.
There we go.
That phone and Kentucky Fried Chicken. It was so great, Liana. I don't know why I always have to keep looking at how to produce. It's so simple, Liana. I really appreciate having you here. This was a wonderful conversation. Can you tell us where we can find you?
Yes, and thank you, Ebony. I have truly enjoyed this conversation as well. It's been so lovely. So my website, ttylnyc.com. You can find out all things my events, more about coaching, selling tie-dye t-shirts, all the things. And then my Instagram's there, also TTYLNYC. Ironically, follow me.
She still likes followers, ladies and gentlemen.
you can email me there as well. And my full name, Liana Pavane at TTYLNYC.com.
Okay, thank you so much for that. It was great talking to Liana. She has some great tips and great insights on technology, and it's just so fascinating to think how fast technology changes. I think like 10 years ago, how much things have changed, let alone since 1988. So, if you would like to follow Liana, please visit her Instagram account that is posted in my show notes, and her website, obviously. Also visit zazo.com this weekend for my big takeaways from my conversation with Liana. And you can also sign up for my weekly newsletter there. And yes, follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood, and follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. And also, I just started posting my interviews on YouTube, so you can now watch all of my guests, or all of my interviews with my guests, on YouTube, and I will post that link in the show notes. And join me next Saturday for another fabulous conversation with a fabulous guest. In the meantime, please stay safe, and I will see you in a week. Okay, bye-bye.